Hi, I'm Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are
Thanks for visiting.
And this is Success Unlocked, Season 1. Let us explain.
So our mission here at Thanks for Visiting is to unite and equip short-term rental hosts to create unique and safe spaces-turned businesses, to strengthen guest and community trust so we can ensure the longevity and profitability of independent hosts. And of course, to bring more host voices to the forefront.
It's one thing to hear our perspective on short-term rental business building strategies, but we wanted to bring more value to you by introducing other incredible hosts to the Thanks for Visiting stage.
So we are excited to present to you this season of Success Unlocked, where our Hosting Business Mastery Membership coaches will discuss operations, social media, unique builds, co-hosting strategies, and so much more.
Today's show, Vacation Ventures, is hosted by Michael Hicks. He has over 20 years experience in various aspects of real estate with 300 deals under his belt. Michael began his career in new construction and is still building homes today, just a little bit differently.
In 2016, Michael and his wife Tia moved into short-term rentals by converting one of their duplexes. They never looked back and began building unique short-term rentals in 2020. From shipping container homes, tree houses, to A-frames. Their homes have been viewed over 5 million times on various social media platforms, been featured in multiple magazines, and on A&E's Living Smaller TV series. So, let's get to it.
All right, guys, Michael Hicks here. I'm with my good friend, Bill Cook. Before Bill introduces himself, I want to go into a little bit about how I met Bill and the events leading up to that. It was probably 2014, 2015. Everybody's recovering from the downturn. I know I was, and looking to get back in the game. And for me, that started with going to one of those weekend seminars where they come to town and tell you how you're going to flip houses and then tell you to go and charge up and max your credit cards out. And then they tell you to buy their $50,000 course. During that course, what they did say was go to your local RIA and start meeting with other investors and other like-minded individuals. And while I didn't sign up for a $50,000 guru, I did go to the local RIA the next time it was in town. And that was when Bill Cook was speaking. And he was speaking on creative deal structuring. So the other piece that I picked up in that weekend seminar was to use other people's money and private financing. And those are things I had done with cars and boats and four-wheelers and buying things and selling things on time. And I thought, man, I never thought of being able to utilize those tools in real estate. But when I went to the RIA, the Real Estate Investors Association meeting there in Chattanooga, and Bill was speaking, I immediately was drawn to him and the methods that he was using and the things that he was saying. So, Bill, tell a little bit about you and your background and how you got to Chattanooga in 2015.
Well, first, I've got to sit back and explain why I'm doing this. Is because Michael, he framed me to get it.
You got a frame right behind you. I framed you.
I know. See, I think that's hilarious. Well, as far as on Chattanooga, Kim and I had a RIA, a Real Estate Investors Association, that we started in January 2002, and we ran it up through the end of January 2015. And one of the things I did is I taught at other places, other RIAs, other event, real estate investing events around the country. And the people who were running the Chattanooga RIA asked me to come up and teach, and that's how I got there.
Well, you haven't always been in real estate. So how did you transition from your previous career into real estate, and what was your previous career?
Okay, so I put myself, y'all should know that I'm a door knocker. So the way I find my properties, one of the questions that real estate investors always ask is, how do you find your deals? The first lesson we learned from Pete Fortunato is you don't find deals, you find uncomfortable situations. And because you take time to ask questions and really understand what the problem is, you're able to structure a deal. You're able to create a deal. Deals are manufactured while you're sitting talking to someone. You won't go out and knock on a door and someone says, oh, here's a deal for you. That almost never happens. So that's how I found probably 95, 98% of all the properties that Kim and I have ever bought or sold, or tenants we found or contractors we have. I found it through door knocking. So I began life when I was 12 years old. It was in Louisville, Kentucky. I couldn't cut grass because I was allergic to grass. So my mother, who sold Electrolux vacuums, had a shampooer, Electrolux shampooer, that she also sold, that we also owned one. And so I would take that door to door, offering to shampoo people's carpets in my neighborhood, $5 for room, biggest or dirtiest carpet. And that's where my door knocking started. Then when it's time to go to college, I had to pay my way through, and I did it. I got a job with Electrolux selling vacuums door to door. And when I graduated, I stayed with them, though I had a lot of job opportunities because I'd been selling vacuums door to door for 5 years. So how long it took me to get through. I'd been selling vacuums all through college. So when I graduated, a lot of people offered me jobs where most people were not, because this is 1983, big recession was going on. But because I had sold door to door, companies recognized that I wasn't someone who said I could do the job. I was someone who proved he could do the job. And I turned those jobs down, stayed with Electrolux, worked for them for a total of 18 years. But over the last 4 years before I stopped Electrolux, I was transitioning into real estate because that's what I really wanted to go do. Something about it appealed to me. It wasn't just the money. I just liked the idea of owning houses and having tenants. And because of my door knocking, I had met a number of investors, investing families that would own 1, 2, 3, 15, 30, 40 single family houses. And it appealed to me. So that's how I got started with the real estate investing. And then when I married my wife, her parents owned 2 or 3 rental properties in Marietta, Georgia. And I wanted to move away from selling vacuums door to door, something that we could do much better. And that was rental property. And Kim was the first person in all my life that I met that said, we can go do this. Everybody else told me, you can't go do this. You'll fail. Rental properties don't work. Tenants, all they do is tear up houses. They never pay rent. None of that was true. But everybody told me that. And it always kept me from actually moving forward. So that's how I got started, Michael.
I waited a long time too, because I had that negative energy behind me telling me, you need to keep a full-time job. You need to have benefits and vacation. And
Where was that coming from?
Family. That's where the biggest negativity came from and the biggest critics. And, you know, now they invested. They had rental properties. They still do. But it was not a full-time, you know, that was a side hustle. That was something extra for retirement. It wasn't meant to be a full-time career for them. So in the back of my head, you know, I just gotten married. I was building. I was adding a rental property here and there. But it was important to them that I had a full-time job. And I kept that full-time job for probably 15 years longer than I should because of that background noise. And looking back, it's easy to say I'd do it different now, but I didn't.
That'd be a good conversation to have, because when you think, I wonder how many people go through this where their main negative influence they have is from family, because that's what you ran into. And I was told that I'd be president of Electrolux one day because it's what my parents wanted me to be. It's what they wanted me to do that. And I did not. I was not put on earth to be a vacuum cleaner salesman, nor to run Electrolux. It's not what I did well, but I love real estate. I remember reading my first real estate investing book that really caught my eye that I thought, hey, and it was called Nothing Down by Robert Allen. I read that probably in about 1983. And that was the first thing, because I'd been meeting people that had rental property. And from that book, when I met other people moving forward that had rental property, what I learned in his book, can you really buy a house with nothing down? Is that possible? And they would assure me that it was. But at the same time, my family, primarily my mother and father, and my bosses were like, you don't want to do this. You're going to fail. It's not going to work. You don't know what it's like. Rental properties are terrible. Yet the people I talked to that had rental properties always told me, hey, it's a really good thing. And people take care of the houses. They pay on time. If you have good houses and you have good tenants, this is not a headache. But there was so much negative energy coming at me. It just took me 10 years. And really, Kim entering my life and becoming my wife, I took her to say, of course we can go do this. My parents have been doing this for 15, 20 years. Of course we can go do this. So I'm very grateful to her. And I'll tell you that on the very first deal we ever did, it was in Canton, Georgia, to tell you how scared I was. I wanted us to do this, but I was very timid. Kim found our first deal. Kim negotiated our first deal. Kim closed our first deal. Kim got the funding on our first deal. Kim did the rehab on our first deal. And it was only after the house was almost rehabbed, someone wanted to rent it, before I stepped into the plate and did anything. I just was doing what she told me to do the whole time, thinking, oh, this is going to be bad. And we owned that house for probably 20 years before we sold it. And it was all because of Kim. It just took one person, positive influence, to tell me I could go do it. And that was enough for me. So again, that's why I said the discussion would be good, is you got to be very careful who you have around you and who you listen to. And don't listen to the mind viruses that tell you you can't go do it or it doesn't work. What they're saying is it doesn't work for them, or they heard stories from other people that were bad. So they never even tried it, but they're telling you it doesn't work without ever even trying it. And those people will kill you. They will kill your dreams.
And that's something that I've always admired about you and the way you conduct yourself. Anytime I'm around you, you go out of your way to make a compliment to me or somebody in the room. And I've never seen you, when you have a conversation with somebody, without complimenting them first. And that's something that I've set to, and tried to come up with and do for myself, and say, I'm going to go out of my way to make a compliment to somebody today and do that every day. And that's a tough one.
It's
hard for me, but I appreciate you being that positive influence on the world.
But I want to talk about what you just said. It's very easy. You just have to look for it. So when I was with Electrolux in my offices, I had something called stinking thinking jars. I learned this from Zig Ziglar. So a great big glass jar and lettering on the front that said stinking thinking. And whenever someone said something negative, whenever they said they can't go do something, whenever they had a downer thing to say, when I asked them how they're doing, they said, well, I didn't sleep all night last night. I was sick. And as soon as they did something like that, they had to put a dollar in the stinking thinking jar. Then after the course of 30 days, I'd contest out that jar, and it would have about $100 in it. And I was always surprised that no matter how long I left the stinking thinking jar, it always continued to fill up. No one would learn the lessons. But if you're just walking through Walmart or a Publix grocery store and you see somebody stacking shelves, look at them and say, hey, thanks for the hard work. Really appreciate it. How easy is that? You just have to look for the goodness in people. And once you get in the habit of doing that, you see it everywhere.
I appreciate it. And I'm going to hit that a little harder and try to make that happen. I'm going to make that happen. Let's dig in a little bit about finding private money. And you talk about Kim funding the deal. And that's probably the number one question I get is, how do you fund all your deals? And for me, the answer has always been relationships. And I know that's the simple answer. Where it started happening for me, and it was organic, but I felt like getting in the room was the important piece. Getting in the room with the right people and not making the ask, but you're in a seminar and you've got 200 people in there and you show up to every seminar that year that's being put on by you or someone else in that group, and you start to be seen and you start to be heard a little bit, and it's showing what you're doing and telling who you're, you know, what you're about. I don't personally feel like it's something that you just go up and ask somebody for. I feel like it's a relationship built over time, 2 to 3, maybe even 4 years of being around people. What are your thoughts on raising private capital? I'm not the one that's going to put on an event and raise capital for a syndication or something of that sort. I'm not saying it won't ever happen, but I'm more on the relationship basis when I'm raising my funds. What are you seeing? Is that kind of where you're at, and how does it happen for you?
Let's go back to the beginning, because you brought up Kim funded the deal. Kim found our financing. The way she did it is, we had a HELOC against our house. So I started like everybody else. I borrowed the money using a home equity line of credit against my residence, or I would go to a bank and get a loan. And back then, we're going back to the 90s, I would get a loan of, let's say, 12 or 13%. And it would be a ballooning loan in about 3 years. But I was told that if I would get this loan at 12, 13%, and if I made payments on it for, this is at a bank, if I made payments on it for 12 months straight without missing a payment, I could refinance it into a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. It would be somewhere between 7 and 8%. So I had two closings. I had the closing when I bought the property, and then I had the closing when I refinanced out into an 8% loan. And that's how we did all our deals. And it wasn't until I got very fortunate, because in the 97, 98 timeframe, I met three phenomenal teachers. And I say this because I want y'all to know that everything you hear me say, everything I've ever done, it goes back to these three teachers. So I didn't just have three great teachers. I went to everything they taught, every time they taught it, and just over and over and over again, because learning creative deal structuring, learning creative financing, it's just a language that you're learning. And the only way you can learn it is to immerse yourself in it. And kind of like what Michael said, be around it, be around those people who are speaking that language. But my three teachers were Jack Miller and Pete Fortunato and Dyke Spotiford. And they, without them, there is no way Kim and I would have achieved the level of success we achieved. We probably would have been successful, but I probably would have stopped around 10, 11, 12 rental houses. And that would have been it. Probably would have kept working for Electrolux, or maybe we would have bought a little store somewhere, something like that. So I'm very grateful. And the way when I started understanding creative financing, that was around 97, 98, when people started, I went to these three men and they were talking about it. I've seen examples of it, that I would go to people and I learned not, and Michael, you hit this point, and I think you're right on. I didn't go to someone and say, hey, listen, I need to go borrow $80,000 of your money in order for me to go buy this house. Instead, I used the phrase, do you know anybody who? And I would go into places, where there was a barbershop or there was a Hardee's where the old men met, or there was a Napa where the old men met every morning. I found out where they went, and I would go sit in and join them. Though as a young man, I sat with the guys who were 65 to 75, 80 years old. And I would say, I'm working on this really, you know, they'd ask, what are you up to? I said, I've got this deal I'm working on, and this is what it's going to be, and here's what we're doing. By the way, do you know anybody who'd be interested in maybe earning X percent on their money secured to this property? And I also, what you said, Michael, when you said sometimes it takes years, and for me, it would take me always a year, year and a half before anybody in there would even mention, much less loan me any money. But over the course of time and my coming back again and again and again and saying those things, I'm working on this other deal. I've got this thing going on. Do you know anybody who? Over the course of time, they learned to trust me. And then once I had done one deal from someone from Napa or Sue's Barbershop or Jim's Restaurant, other people would come to me and say, well, let me try some of that. Let me try this with you. So that's how it started.
Something you said there, you talked about, do you know who, or do you know anyone who? And I talked about that on an episode with Charlie Ike yesterday, that words matter and how things are presented matter. And going to those groups and having the coffee with those guys, it's so much more than borrowing money. It truly is a relationship. And if you want it to be long-term, you need to be genuine. You know, it's not going out there and just, hey, you got any money? Do you know anyone who would be interested in receiving a return? So Bill and I had the opportunity to spend some time on the Appalachian Trail hiking. We've hiked in sections of Georgia and now Virginia, spent a lot of time out there. And when you get out there and you have the opportunity to be in the woods and reflect on what you're doing and everything that you've done over the years, what is the biggest thing that you see that's contributed to the success you've had with Creative Deal Structuring, aside from the coaches or aside from the mentors? What one piece would you say, looking back, would be the key?
Action.
All right. That's where I was hoping you'd go. Everybody asks, and yeah, you can build the relationships, but if you don't get off the couch and take the action to take the steps necessary to close the deal or to find the deal or to fund the deal, it's never going to happen. And I see that as one of the biggest hurdles to creative funding or finding private money, is people aren't willing to put in the work to get those funds. They aren't willing to put in the time to build those relationships. What would you tell that person, other than taking action? Where should they start?
Take action. Go. Okay. So in my case, this, the latest round, when I moved to Adairsville, Georgia, back in 1999, I found something called Sue's Barbershop. So it was a man's barbershop, which I like, barber pole out front. And a lady named Sue ran that barbershop, but she had something in there called the Liars Club. And it was retired men would come in every morning at 7:30 to probably about 9 and then leave. Not for haircuts. They just came in and talked, kind of like Floyd's Barbershop in the Andy Griffin Show. Then they would come back somewhere around 3:30 in the afternoon and stay until 5 when she closed. And I would go in there 2-3 times a week. And same thing happened at Napa. Every morning, guys gathered around the counter when Napa opened up, car guys, but they just talked to each other. There'd be 8-9 guys in there just having a cup of coffee, having a donut or something like that. Hardee's in Adairsville. That's another place where the older guys met. And I started going in there and getting a biscuit once a week, once, maybe twice a month. Waffle House was another place that guys would meet. And I would go in there and see them. But I just kept going back. And you have to take action. It's kind of like if someone came to me and said, their goal is to run a marathon. And they said, okay, Bill, you've run a marathon. What is the best piece of advice that you would have for me? I said, easy. Tomorrow morning, better yet today, but at least by tomorrow morning, get up and go run. I don't care what kind of shoes you wear. I don't care about your socks or your running pants. I don't care about your diet. I don't care about your health. I don't care about you going to a doctor. You get out of your house and you go run. I don't care how far you run. Run 4 mailbox and then walk home. And then the next day, get up and run 5 mailboxes and walk home. Everything else will work itself out as long as you go out every morning and you run a little bit further. And then the 6 months, you'll be able to run a marathon. So it's not rocket science. This is, you know, if I can run a marathon, anybody can. It's just I got up every day and went running a little bit further than I did the day before. And it was a goal of mine and I was able to reach it. And I think that was the key, was every morning, go out and run. You want to get creative financing. You want to find private money. And understand the difference between private money, institutional money, and hard money. So institutional money, let's define that first. That's going to be when you go to a bank, some type of lending organization that's basically a bank, a mortgage company. And that's one way to get financing, but there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, a lot of time to get that to happen. The next group you can go to are called hard money lenders. And they're called hard money lenders because they're hard to pay back. They charge much higher interest. oftentimes they're going to charge points. I'm a hard money lender. So if you came to me and you needed to borrow money to do one of your deals, I'm going to charge probably in the neighborhood of 13, 14, 15% interest and somewhere between 3 to 5 points, and probably also want an option for part of the upside on that property one day when you sell it. But the thing is, I'm going to know your deal better than you know your deal. And more than likely, for the people who bring me, they come to me for their funds, I'm going to help them structure their deal differently. This will make it safer and more profitable. But that's what hard money is. They know your deal better than you do. Private money is just someone in your neighborhood. Usually they're not in real estate. They're not professionals. They're just a mom and pop. They have money sitting in the bank account earning 2% interest, and they would like to make 5%. And so most of the funding that I use this long term is coming from private money lenders.
No, you hit it. You went right to it. So you talked about hanging out at the restaurants and and all the places. And thinking back, that's where when I purchased my self-storage facility in 2019, it came from a lead at the restaurant that I eat at every morning, or that I was eating at every morning. The gentleman had owned the facility for 20 years. He was in there, and I'd walk by his table every morning. When you get ready to sell, let me know. And that went on for over 3 years. So I say every morning.
So what you just hit, that's it. But same thing. You and I are doing exactly the same thing. Most of my deals, most of my funding, most of what I do, it's just what you said. It's being nice to people. How you doing? A kind word. And letting them know that you're interested. You don't just say, hello, good to see you. Aren't you handsome this morning? You've got to also add, hey, if you ever think about selling.
Oh, you weren't talking to me.
Yes, I was. It's a matter of fact.
Taking action and running the marathon, that's something else that really impresses me about you. You work a 5-mile radius of the Cartersville Walmart. And what do you do? When you head out, you stay out until you do what?
I've made 25 written offers.
That's every week.
That's every day.
Every day. 25 written offers a day.
No, I take that back. No, when I was doing it before, it was 25 written offers per week. And once I hit offer number 25, I was done for that week. My goal was to go out and make 25 written offers. That was the action. So everything else was noise. That was me going running my miles if I was going to do a marathon. And usually I hit 25 written offers by Wednesday afternoon most of the time. And then once I'd done my 25 written offers that week, I knocked on my first door every morning at 9 o'clock. I finished at 30 minutes before sunset. But all during the day, I was working. I was out in the neighborhood working, going around and around my 5-mile circle, not leaving that circle. It would take me about 3 months to get all the way around the circle. And then I would just start it again and did it 4 times a year. And anyway, just making sure I was out there, that was the important thing in finding those deals. And I'm about to go make 1,000 written offers. So I've been wanting to do this now for 2 years, but because of family health issues and some things that were popping up and where do we want to stay and big life decisions we're making, I've had to put this off and delay this. Goal I have is to go and make 1,000 written offers, take a picture of every offer I make, put it up on our website so people can see where I'm working. You'll see the address of the property. You'll see the offer I'm making. And once and for all, let people see what it takes to succeed. And my guess is if I go make 1,000 written offers, I like to buy about 6 or 7 more homes. And I think if I make 1,000 written offers, I think I'm going to buy 6 or 7 more houses. Pretty sure that's going to happen.
So what you're telling me is that you don't send 40,000 text messages out and you don't and you don't do you don't have somebody in the Philippines cold calling for you?
No, I just go out door knock.
That's it for me. That's what I love about real estate. There's so many different paths. There's no one wrong or right path. For you, it's sitting down in front of the seller. For me, that's the same thing. I want to sit down in front of the seller. Now, I don't knock on doors, but if I see a property that I like, I don't go knocking daily to find leads. But if I drive by and I see a property I like, I'm pulling it up and I'm going and knocking on their door, and I want to sit down and have a conversation with them. Like you say, you want to solve the problem. You want to determine what the problem is, and then you can make a win-win situation for both parties. But I think a lot of that's lost in a cold call or a text, and it's just another number and it's just another property. What do you see going forward? Do you see with the addition of AI and the cold calling and the text blast that they're all automated? Do you feel like, I sometimes feel like I'm getting left behind.
Yeah. It's funny you would feel like that. And just so everybody knows, Michael, when you get a trail name, you don't necessarily, in fact, you don't get to pick it. We pick it for you. When you're hiking the Appalachian Trail, everybody gets their own trail name. And Michael's trail name is left behind. Just, we'll go into maybe another time.
It's not because I'm slow, is it?
No, you're always in front of us, but you leave gear at the campsite. Michael's always the first one out of the camp, like an hour ahead of us. So by the time we get up and we get our gear together, we realize there's a sleeping bag sitting there, or a food bag that got remained behind, or a tent that didn't get packed. It's like, well, whose is that? So one of us has to carry that damn thing for the rest of the day up and down the hills on the Appalachian Trail to try to catch Michael, which we're not able to do until the very end of the day because he leaves it behind. So after a number of times of him leaving things behind, he got that trail name.
Everybody's so concerned about pack weight. There's no better no better way to lighten your load than to leave it at the campsite. But seriously, do you feel like the leads are fewer? Do you feel like that it's a lot? I know it's a lost art or going that way quickly, but where do you see it going?
I don't know. I do know that I think this reminds me a lot of 1995, 1996, and 1997. I don't mean real estate. I mean internet. Internet was a brand new thing. AOL had not been invented yet. It was not there yet. I think it came along about 96 or so. But there was this thing called the internet, and you had green screens with white letters that just flashed around, and you could do little messages back and forth, a real basic letter. And then AOL came along and changed everything. You got mail, and they had a software that you could use and see things and get messages, and it changed everything. And I was late to that game. I didn't really start using email and the internet probably until around 98. And I remember finding a discussion board. It was called CRE Online, and it stood for Creative Real Estate Online. And it was the first discussion board for real estate investors in the country. And when I went there, and they actually had a discussion board where people could post questions and you could read answers and people would answer those questions, it gave me a source of information I didn't have anywhere else. And then a guy broke off from CRE Online and started something called Dealmakers Cafe, named Matt. And that became the go-to place. But I remember seeing the internet for the first time and going, holy cow, really beginning to understand the power of this thing and then getting on board with it. And then I remember when Steven Jobs, I think it was 07 or 08, when he, if you want to watch a really great YouTube video, watch it when Steve Jobs introduces the smartphone for the very first time. The world didn't know what a smartphone was. It did exist. But you watched that presentation that he did and what cell phones were like before then and what they were like after he introduced the iPhone. And the world has never been the same. And I think AI is that. I'm paying attention to it better now. I'm not intimidated by it. I know it's going to change the world. But just like the internet changed the world for the good and the bad, and the smartphone changed the world for the good and the bad, AI will change the world for the good and the bad. And it's how you use it, what you do with it, how much of a tool it becomes to you, or how much of a crutch, a money sucking crutch it becomes to you. But you have that choice. So yeah, I think AI is going to be a very big deal. But I think there's always a place, because our species has been around for 2 million years, 1.5 million years, and we came up from campfires and meeting and face to face. And I don't think that's going to go away overnight. And when you ask people, when they get together for the family function, they gather around the dinner table at Thanksgiving or something like that and spending time with each other.
All right. Let's go back to the funding and financing. If once you've secured your funding as an investor, how do they memorialize that? How do we protect ourselves and the investor?
Do you want me to talk as the lender or as the borrower?
Come as the borrower for this, because I think that's usually the second question is, what do my documents need to be? What do they need to look like? Where do I get those?
Okay, so recently I was doing a deal where I needed to borrow about $85,000 because my money was out. I keep my money loaned out, so I just didn't have the funds to do a deal that I really wanted to be a part of, and I needed $85,000. And so I turned to my friend Dyke Spotterford, who's a hard money lender, one of my primary teachers, going back to 97. And I borrowed the money from him. So I called him up. And the first question he asked me is, what is the collateral for the loan? And what he was really seeking is, if I don't fulfill my promise to him, if I don't pay him, he needs something that he holds of value that will allow him to recapture the money he's loaning me. And because of the trials and tribulations he'll have to go through, the extra work he'll have to go through in order to do a foreclosure or whatever he needs to do, he wants to make additional money. So the collateral for my promise becomes very important. So that's his first question. Then he'll ask me about the property I'm buying and how much money I need to see, you know, am I using just the property I'm buying as collateral? And if that's not enough, I may have to put up one or two or three additional pieces of property to make him feel secure. So that's where the conversation starts. And then when it comes down...
Good collateral.
Yeah, good collateral. Yeah,
Jimmy Napier told us...
Is his promise secured?
Do you remember Jimmy Napier telling the story of the... He went to the doctor to get his blood pressure checked, have his physical and everything. And the nurse comes in and takes his blood pressure and just remarked at how good it was and asked him how he did it. And he said he looked at her and told her, good collateral. Yeah. I love listening to Jimmy's stories.
I do remember that.
But yeah, good collateral is number one.
Okay, then the second thing we're going to do is we're going to sit down. Usually we'll go have barbecue somewhere and we'll both bring a pad and paper and we're going to talk about the terms. What's the money going to cost me? What interest rate? And this is a back and forth thing because maybe my interest rate comes down so the payments can come down, but the points will go up. Maybe the points need to come down and the interest rate will go up. Or maybe I need to not have any payments on this particular deal where I don't need to do any payments for 7 months.
You mean you can borrow money without making payments?
Yep. But the interest rate and the points will go up. So again, and the collateral has got to be really good. So it's just us going back and forth until we hammer out something that works for Dykes and something that works for me. And we write it down on a pad of paper, you know? I just write it down, bullets.
There's no hard and fast. It's got to be this rate and these terms. And that's what I love about seller financing and working with private lenders is everything's a negotiation. Everything is on the table. You work through it and come up with what works best for both of you.
Yeah. And what I'm talking about right now, what I'm discussing right now is I borrowed money from a hard money lender. And I want to finish this one out. Then I will talk to you about when I borrowed money from a private money lender because I just did that also. But anyway, so we will go through and get everything hammered out. And then Dykes will draw up a note based on what it is we agreed to. And then he'll draw up a deed of trust. You may live in a mortgage state. It's all another way to secure a note. Promissory note is to use a mortgage. But in Georgia, we're a deed of trust state. So we use a deed of trust. So he draws those up and he sends them to me for me to look at and see if I have any questions. And they're very pro-lender. It's not pro-borrower. It's very pro-lender because Dykes is there to protect himself. And then once I like the documents, then we'll schedule something with Lee Perkins, who's my attorney since 2001. And I'll go to his office and that's where the loan's done. Dykes will wire the money. He never sends it directly to me. He'll wire the money into Lee's office. Lee will handle the loan paperwork and we'll do like usually a HUD one. And I sign the note. I sign the security deed. Anything else Dykes needs me to sign, some make sure I understand what I'm getting into. And then the money goes to me and the documents go to Dykes. Now, the difference between me borrowing money from Dykes is a private money lender. So when I go to a private money lender, they don't know how to fill out a note.
Hang on. Before you go to the private money lender, you're saying he sends his money to the title company? He doesn't just give you a check?
Wires
his money to the title. And you know where I'm going with this. So...
Yes.
A borrower, would I not just get the check directly and do it that way? And I'm asking this because I'm wanting the audience to understand, not because I don't know.
No, I know you know because you and I, you've gone to the same classes I've gone to. You've gone to Dykes' Lending Seminar, these things. But I cannot tell you the number of phone calls I get from lenders that have loaned money to someone where they just sent them the money. They gave them the check, they gave them the cash, they wired the money to their account, and whoever the borrower was going to sign the note or secure the note and just never did, and never did that. Not enough due diligence was done. So you want to make sure, because I do a lending too. I love Michael like a brother. I trust Michael with my life. If Michael was at my house and I had $1 million sitting on my dining room table, and I had to go to town for a couple hours, when I came back, I would never think I need to count the money on the table. I trust Michael with my life. At the same time, if Michael came to me and said, I need to borrow the money, I need to make sure that it's secured and it's done right and that we've agreed to this. So we will follow the rules that I've learned from Dykes and Pete and Jack. And I won't just send him the check. And that's the way you should run your business. I learned that from Dykes Spotiford. Run your business like a business. So if I was loaning money to Michael, who's like my brother, I'm still going to wire the money to the attorney. I'm still going to have him sign the note. He's still going to sign the security deed for the mortgage. It's still going to go get recorded in the courthouse. We're going to do this the way we're supposed to. And that keeps us all honest and working right. And if anything happens to Michael or anything happens to me, we're both protected.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. I don't think anybody, the majority of people are not setting out to do bad, but things happen. I could walk out of the closing and get hit by a truck. I mean, you just never know. You've got to protect yourself on the front end. That's money that you've worked hard for. That's a project that I've worked hard to get. Everybody has to protect themselves, but you want to take care of your lenders.
Yep.
Tell us about the private financing.
So the difference is Dykes would have prepared all the paperwork. When we sat down, it was a back and forth conversation between the lender and the borrower. When I sit down and talk to a private money lender, so I'm going to use Ms. Treadaway as an example. When I would do loans with her, we would, same thing, legal pad, what's good for you, what's not. But instead of asking for things like points, that's not in her world, or a high interest rate, that's not in her world. I'm the one that has to prepare the note. I'm the one that has to prepare the security. She could go to an attorney to do this, but long ago she learned to trust me and my paperwork, because the paperwork I use with Ms. Treadaway is not pro-borrower paperwork. And it's not even neutral paperwork. It's pro-lender paperwork. And if she went to an attorney, that would be more of a neutral type note and security. It would lean more toward the lender, of course. But the note and security instrument I use is very, very, very pro-lender. And I explained to her, this is what you want to use. You don't want to use something you're going to get boilerplate you get from an attorney. And she likes that I have her best interests at heart. But most of the time when I'm doing a loan with a private money lender, 4.5% to 5.5% interest is very normal. And 10 years to 20 year term is very normal. Big difference. So right now people are sitting there going, why would I ever go to Dykes Spotterford? Why would I ever go to a hard money lender? Number one is I can have this done in a day or two, right? Because we've worked together for a long time. But I'm willing to go to Dykes because part of the deal includes Dykes Spotterford. I'm doing a deal with a man that's made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of loans. I'm learning. I don't mind what I'm paying out because I'm trading that for his expertise. I'm a lot of times bringing him into my deals one form or another because I have him looking over my shoulder. And what I learn, once I've learned a lesson from him, that lesson is with me forever. I don't mind paying extra for that because I can take that lesson and go do many more deals with that lesson that I wouldn't have been able to do before I had learned that lesson from Mr. Spotterford.
Yeah, that's huge.
I go to Dykes because he's fast, but I learn so much. I learned my lending business from Dykes Spotterford. And it was me borrowing from him that taught me how to be a lender, in addition to taking his class.
Yeah, so you're learning along the way. The other thing there is the speed of the funds. And you talked about having the money in a day. Sometimes the deals are time is of the essence, and you've got to close in a few days, and you don't have time to wait on a bank to underwrite a deal. A lot of our new construction, we're building with private funds, and this is a year or two, whatever ago, we're paying 10% versus 6% at the bank. But we can have the money in 3 days, where it's going to take 6 weeks at the bank. They've got to underwrite it. They've got to have appraisals. By the time you pay all the bank fees, if you're building that house in 6 to 7 months, it's the same. It's a wash. Doesn't make a difference. So I don't mind paying the extra juice, especially if it's to a friend, a financial friend that we're helping grow their retirement account. We're helping them with an extra income. It's a win-win for everybody.
And I love using this example. I use it all the time. Is in 2008, Kim and I decided to start buying mobile homes in mobile home parks. So we weren't buying the dirt, just the mobile home. We're buying the mobile home for cash, sell the mobile home on time. So we would get title to the mobile home. We own the mobile home, bought it for cash, but then turn around and sell it and get a note back that we would still hold title until the note was paid off, just like with a car. And I had never done that, though I'd done a bunch of single family homes by this time. I had never done that. So I went to Dykes Spotterford, who had done hundreds and hundreds of trailers, developed mobile home subdivisions and new mobile homes backwards and forwards and sideways. And I said, if you will look over my shoulder, I'll give you half of this mobile home I'm buying. I'll give you half of the deal. We'll split the net profit every month 50-50. And so he was up for that. He didn't have to go to work. He didn't have to go find it. He didn't have to go do anything. In fact, he's only been to that mobile home. This was in 2008. He's only been to that mobile home one time, and we're now in 2023. But every month, he's gotten a check for half of the profit. So good deal for him. But what I got was Dykes looking over my shoulder. And as we did that deal in Poplar Springs, him guiding me and telling me mistakes I was making and using his paperwork and learning how to understand that paperwork, I got a feel for this type of deal and this type of this deal structure is called a Lonnie deal, named after a guy named Lonnie Scruggs. So he's the one that came up with this technique, buying a mobile home in a park for cash, selling it on time and getting a note back. So you're in the note business. You're not in the rental business. That's the key. And the mistakes I would have made without him looking over my shoulder, Kim and I went out and did 51 additional Lonnie deals. Those all 51 were done without Dykes, because now I knew what I was doing. And each one was bringing in roughly $350, $300 to $400 a month. Do the math.
It doesn't take long, does it?
$300 to $400 a month, 50, a total, you know, 51 things. So I'm giving up half of my income on one mobile home, but I get these other 51. And on top of that, it gave me the confidence in 2009 to buy a mobile home park in White, Georgia, that I never would have even thought about buying if I hadn't done that first deal with Dykes. So do you see, in giving up half of $300 per month, which is what that trailer made in the beginning, so I'm giving up $150 a month to get that education that allowed me to do a mobile home park and all these other Lonnie deals. Plus, it allowed us to work with each other and learn to really respect and like each other and trust each other. And that led to many, many more deals, to the point that he and I were just part of a loan that we just did on another investor who bought a small mobile home park in Rome, Georgia. So he and I are both in that deal as lenders and did that loan. Again, I was the young man that came to me for the loan on the mobile home park, came to me because of my knowledge now about mobile homes and mobile home parks. And I just think that was kind of funny, but I made Dykes part of that deal.
Going back to the mobile home that you did with Dykes, how many times have you sold that home?
We have sold it 3 times. And one of the lessons Dykes told me was mobile homes are not mobile. Once they are somewhere, they don't ever get moved again. But the people in them are very mobile. So he taught me to make sure I do a 10-year note, nothing shorter than 10 years. If I can do it 15 years, do it 15 years. Because over the course of the 10 or 15 years, something will happen to most people in the homes. And because they're transient, they will move out. Often after a year to 3 years is normal, you get the home back. Normally, they've made some improvements to the mobile home. They've changed out the cabinets or redid the bathroom, because I'm selling to mainly the contractors. And this is what they do. And then you turn around when you get the home back, you sell it again for a higher price, higher down payments, higher monthly payment. And then you get it back and you do it again at an even higher price, higher monthly payments. And just keeps going on.
How long ago did you pay Dykes off?
It took me, I think, 4 months.
4 months.
In 2008, we did this deal. And I think we did the deal in October. And somewhere by April or maybe March of 2009, he was paid off.
But you're still sending him checks.
Yes. So what he contributed was $3,000. So that was his end cost to this deal. And I paid him, but he got the first money out. So all we were making came back to Dykes until his $3,000 was paid off. But and this is getting a little bit complicated, but the paperwork we used was something called a participation note. And that allowed Dykes to, even after the loan was paid off, forever, for as long as we have this home, I own this home, I give him half of the net rents. And to say this again, I don't mind paying him half of the rents, because look at what it got us. And it wasn't that we got 51 more trailers or mobile home park. What it got us was his expertise, his knowledge, his teaching me how to do this, and then us going, putting that to work and doing more deals. But what he taught us was by far the most valuable part of this deal.
I had rather do a build for a percentage of the equity and a percentage of the cash flow, with the potential for more and more deals, more and more partnerships down the road with those individuals, and develop the long-term relationship, than I had billed for a fee one time.
Just so everybody knows, if you want to know the most important part about this podcast, you just heard Michael say it. You just learned that lesson from Michael. Most important thing I've heard anything I'm going to ever say. And that was just a gem. You should write that down and put it on your mirror.
I need to write it down and put it on mine. Sometimes I have to second guess myself. Bill, thank you so much for coming on. How do we find Bill Cook?
Well, look in the frame. See? My website is billandkimcook.com. I'm easy to find. My phone number is 770-815-8727. People always ask, can I call you? The answer is yes. Don't text me. to ask me if you can call me, just call me. I answer my phone. If I don't answer my phone, that means I'm busy. So I've had about 7 or 8 phone calls while I've been on this call. I've been watching my phone over here go. And so when I get in the car and head out today, I'll start returning phone calls. So I'm easy to reach. I know Michael is also. And you want people around you who are willing to give and help you get to where you want to go.
All right, guys. We'll see you next time. Bill, thanks so much for coming on.
Love you, buddy.
Love you. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for additional information about today's episode. And please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Ever wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.